This is an interview done with Mr. A. Clemens, a Hong Kong war vet, on the 14th of February, 1972, by Ross Bond.
I'm not going to ask too many questions. I'm going to... I hope maybe you can do most of the talking. I was just wondering if you worked previous to the war, or how old were you?
I was 29 years old.
You were 29 when you were in the Grenadiers, was it?
Grenadiers. Yeah. I joined right from the very beginning of 1939 when the war broke out. We left Canada here in 1940, the spring of 41, the spring of 40. We were on our way to England as a fully trained machine gun. Then we went to Jamaica. We spent 18 beautiful months in Jamaica.
Yes, I've heard all sorts of fun.
Then we were brought back home again in 1941, in the fall of 41. We were put in a Robinson building to be regrouped as an infantry. We left again in October, about the end of October somewhere, I can't just remember the dates, end of October, which was a hoodoo trip from the time we left. We just got to Brandon, we hit and killed a man and a woman at the train gate. Then the fellow says we had a very heavy train, as we were going through the mountains, we kept stepping off. All we had to do was open the door and step out, because that's how slow we were going. Then we got to Vancouver. That's the first time in my life I ever saw a tripe. We all walked off the boat. Yeah, I thought somebody put the sole of their shoe on my plate, that's what it looked like. So anyway, they talked us going back on the boat again. They pulled out 3 miles and dropped anchor. And we had mutton from there till we hit Hawaii.
Can I go back and ask a bit about the training? You said you were trained as a machine gun.
We were trained as a machine gun. Fully trained machine gun regiment. But when they brought us back here to Winnipeg and made us into infantry, we had no training. They gave us a rifle. They said we were infantry, and away we went.
What kind of equipment were you? Just a rifle.
We had no other equipment. Just a rifle.
Can I ask what rank you were?
Private. Then we had one man we dumped off in Honolulu that got appendix. Then we landed in Hong Kong in November, about the middle of November. And from the middle of November to about the 20th of November, then the war started.
Did you undergo any training?
No training.
Not at all?
No training. We never had time to train. We never had anything trained yet. It was supposed to be coming up behind us. Next thing we know, the war on us.
Well, you were sent to Hong Kong primarily as garrison troops, I understand.
Well, yes. But as an infantry outfit.
Right.
But that's all we had was just rifles. And then they all didn't have rifles. Everybody didn't have enough rifles to go around. Well, then when the war broke out, they found these rifles from somewhere. And then that's what we used for fighting.
Yeah, you were in Hong Kong for, I guess, a couple months before the war broke.
Oh, no, we were only there about 3 weeks.
3 weeks, pardon me, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You remember what happened in those 3 weeks with you?
Oh, God, let me see now.
Did you travel around the island much? Have you looked around?
We didn't get time. Well, we looked around from the mainland over to the sea. We were on the mainland. We were in Champchapo camp.
Mm-hmm.
We used to go over to the island to see over in the island. It had been a beautiful island. And a few drunks in the Sun and places like that. And
the Sun, is that a...
That was a big hotel, but it was a brothel house as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we always patronized that more than any other place.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, out of a clear blue sky, we got, for a week we were there, we could hear this artillery going, you know, but they said, oh, don't worry about it, it's only the Japanese, because they were to the border line, they were just about to Canton, you see, and we could hear them training and everything else. We didn't even have an airplane there. They said, oh, don't worry, they're only taking target practice and stuff like that. But they weren't taking target practice, they were getting ready to jump this.
Were you getting prepared in the meantime?
Well, we had nothing to get prepared yet. We were waiting for our
equipment
to come. Yeah. But it never got there because they had sealed that part of the city off. Well, then when the war did, we got word we were moved out at 12 o'clock at night. Everybody had to clear out of the barracks. And I was in the transport. We did have a few trucks that belonged to the British government. And I was with the transport, so we stayed behind.
I have a map here, Papa. I haven't seen one since.
Oh, this is the island here, huh?
Yeah.
This just shows the island, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The mainland.
I have.
You got one of the mainland?
One of the mainland. Frontier would be here.
That's right. The frontier is all up here. This is the New Terrace Colon, Castle Peak. Well, you're still down the mountains. We were right on the waterfront.
Here, yeah. There's a little bit of a map here. Here's the border, Chinese border.
Border.
There's Hong Kong Island.
We were in Kowloon. And our camp, Sham Shui Po camp, was right in the center of Kowloon. We were moved from here over to the island about midnight.
So I guess it'd be...
Somebody got warning that the war was going to declare. Now, how it came, we don't know even how the information came. But we were all moved out, moved to the island here, to Victoria, and stationed in different places. Some of them were standing with wooden rifles, believe it or not.
Wooden rifles?
Wooden rifles on posts, and they say there's going to be a war. Well... I was left behind in the camp because I was in the transport. There was three truck drivers left behind to take over the rations the next day. Well, that morning, bright and early, they hit, and they figured they had a lot of Chinese. Most of the officers had all Chinese batmen and everything. Well, they started to run every which way, and I guess they must have thought that was troops, train machine guns, everything and anything that moved in these camps. And
the Chinese Batman?
Well, yeah, no, but the airplanes, when the Japanese hit, they machine gunned anything that moved, got machine gunned. And that was the start of the war. Well, we went over to the island, and it was about, well, I guess the war lasted about 7 or 8 days. But anyway, the British had got trapped up here near the border.
Mm-hmm.
So they sent a company of our guys up to try and get them out. Well, we never did get there because we just left Hong Kong about. We got about halfway up the mountain when we met a great big Scotch major. And he said, "Where are you Canadians going?" He said, "We're going up to the border to pick up some men."
This is up towards the Chinese people?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He said, "You might as well turn them trucks right around because they're only 50 yards behind us." Well, by this time they had built sandbags all around the waterfront here. All along the waterfront so that we could load our boats. And they had a bunch of Indian troops with horses, artillery and everything. And they were all coming down. And you never saw such a shamozla in all your life. It was horses, there was guns, there was everything. And they were trying to load them on these ferries that went over to the island. The Chinese got scared and run off, and there was nobody to operate the ferries. So then we had to wait then for the Navy to come and operate these ferries. And it was just lucky they weren't good. Their pilots were very poor bombers. They couldn't hit a barn if they tried. And they missed everything. But what a shamozer it was. I don't think we lost a man, though. We never lost a man. But we had these sandbags here, this barricade, to stop holding them back while we got everything loaded and got out of there. Well, then we got to the island. Well, we were on the island about 4 days before they ever attempted to cross. Then when they did cross, they crossed in mass. You couldn't you couldn't stop them if you tried because there were so many of them.
Was there any fighting? Do you remember any fighting taking place around the sandbags that they came up
to? Oh, yes, they came up to the sandbags. Yeah. But they were held back. There was enough of us to hold them back until we get everything loaded, and then we just took off. But all the time they're bombing us from their airplanes. And I don't think all the bombs they dropped, they never hit nobody. But then we got it was about a good 3 or 4 days before, or maybe a week before they hit the island. And then it lasted about 4 days. Christmas Day is when the island fell. But we killed, what, 38,000?
Quite a few.
Yeah, 38,000 we killed. As I know, they had a massive monument there to hold all the names that had died there.
In the time that you went to the island, do you remember what you did during those days?
You mean fighting?
Yeah, fighting or just even movement.
Well, I drove a water tank. They cut our water supply out, and I was hauling water from one post to the other.
I wonder if you can remember what it is.
Well,
there's a Mount Cameron. Somebody told me that was a large mountain.
That is, it's a fair large mountain. Where's, I can't think of half the place now. That's one of the things that left me with the phone number.
Yeah.
Our graves are there. The Canadian graves are in, by the way, I got a picture of that cemetery.
Well, I guess it doesn't make much difference, but you were hauling water.
Water to all these different, until they blew that thing up. And
Was it water that you were getting from wells?
Getting from a well, from the dairy farm. Like it would be like the city dairy here, but they called it the dairy farm.
You pump it out into tankers,
like Imperial Oil tankers. We use like an Imperial Oil semi-trailer tanker.
Mm-hmm.
And haul the water in that.
Was it good water?
Good water, very good water. And it was more, I would say, guerrilla warfare than actual fighting. You know, we were fighting just little groups. When they landed, the first thing they did, they drove right through this island and cut it right in half.
Interesting. Came down here. According to the official account, it came tapped over here.
That's right. Yeah. And there was a thing I forgot to tell you. When we first got there to Hong Kong, there was a funeral as high as 6-7 funerals a day, and they always went to the same burial ground. And it was Japanese rifles they were putting in there. That's where the first place they hit for.
These would be Chinese funerals?
Well, they were...
funerals for people who lived there, I guess?
Well, but they weren't funerals, actual funerals. They were being posed as a funeral, you know? And they'd have big burial parties and everything going with them. But in those coffins, it was full of ammunition and machine guns. And they were burying them in this cemetery. And that's the first place they hit when they landed, was this ammunition dump that they had placed in there. And that's...
Can you remember how you found out that information?
We watched them dig it up. We happened to come across them digging them up. Like the night they attacked, well, they attacked during the night. And we drove a bunch of men to One Chai Gap. Now, that's where the Canadians made their biggest stand, was at One Chai Gap. Now, we drove two battalions in there, or two companies in there. They let them men off, and we drove away, and then they attacked. And the Canadians...
One Chai Gap.
Yeah, well, that's where the Canadians made their biggest stand, was at One Chai Gap. They held that place, they held them back there for 2 days. Before, and then they pulled out, and they couldn't take it anymore. That's where most of our men were killed at One Chai Gap. And from there on, it was just guerrilla warfare.
Do you remember much of... Well, it's been said that the officers and the non-commissioned officers, it was difficulty in the orders flowing down, the communication breakdown,
well,
these people were scattered.
We had no communication, because as I say, it was just guerrilla warfare. I mean, we had no communications. There was no communications. Everything was, as they said, they split the island in two, then they started to split it every which way. And we were just fighting in little pockets here, there, and everywhere. Until eventually we got word how it got to us that they had surrendered.
Do you remember how the word came? after you surrendered? What happened after that?
Wilford Queen Hughes was there. We were in a house. It was Christmas Day. And we were in this big millionaire's mansion. And we got word that they had surrendered. And that we were to go to... what was the name of that barracks in Hong Kong? And there was a British barracks in Victoria, or in Hong Kong. In the island of Hong Kong. Didn't show it to me.
Police station?
No, didn't show it, but I can't think of the name of this barracks. But we were all marched there.
It was British barracks?
Yeah, British barracks.
Did you hear that Hong Kong belonged to the Defense Corps?
No. It wasn't too far from Bone Road Hospital. Does it show Bone Road Hospital on here? What's this here? Royal Scots and Olympic Grenadiers. And the Hong Kong Volunteer Defense.
Doesn't have
any
questions. It wasn't far from the hospital.
It wasn't far from the hospital, no. We were all there. We piled our guns there, our rifles there, and from there on, the Japanese took over, and we were marched to the Hong Kong University one night. We stayed in the Hong Kong University one night, and the next morning we were marched to right down to the waterfront in a Chinese refugee camp. It was also right on the bay between the mainland and the, that would be up around, where's the...
Well, this is Kowloon here, this is the island.
Yeah, well here,
the docks
well here.
Are along here.
Well, we were along here though somewhere. We were just about opposite here. It doesn't show the racetrack here?
No.
We weren't too far from the racetrack. We were in about here somewhere, in a Chinese refugee camp. That's where they kept us. Oh, for about 6 months. That's where we first got introduced to rice. That's where we had this little officer, Tojo, told us that we were prisoners of war with the great Asiatic powers, and we were going to know what the word of prisoners of war meant, and we did. We found out.
Can I ask what you thought before the surrender? Did you know what would happen?
No, we didn't, because we were told that they didn't take prisoners, they weren't bothered with prisoners, so we didn't know what the score was going to be until they rounded us all up and put us in the camp, and that's when he told us that we were prisoners of war of the great Asiatic power, and that we would know what the meaning of prisoners of war meant. Well, he wasn't fooling when he said that.
Did they shoot any prisoners or something?
No, there was no prisoner shot. There was a lot of prisoners died from the cause of beating up and mm-hmm. stuff like that, but there was none to my knowledge ever shot.
Were you wounded at all, or did you
no.
have any close friends killed?
Oh, I had lots of friends killed. Or killed that died in the prison camp. Not that I know was killed, no.
So you know, after the surrender, you were taken to?
We were taken to this refugee camp. And then we were there for 6 months, and then we were taken back to Kowloon again to our Shamsipo camp. And that's where we stayed. That's where I stayed for the remainder of the war. At that time all the time we were in there, we were eating rice or green vegetables, little fish.
Were there any officers in charge
of us?
Yeah, after the surrender, yeah.
No, our officers were separated from us completely. They had nothing to do with us. They were separated in a different camp altogether.
Were you doing any work at that time? Or were
you yes, we were building, first we started to build an airport. And that's when most of the guys took sick and died, because they really worked this. They worked the daylight out of this. And then we didn't make a very good job of that site. When we started to pour the runways, some was pure cement, some was pure sand, some was a mixture.
This was done on purpose?
I'm sure done on purpose. Well then, they took us out of that, and they put the Chinese in to finish it off. Then they took us to work in a big Imperial Oil. Refinery there. We were making airplane gas. We put a test tube of this high test octane in the dummy gas. Well, we were, sometimes we'd let four or five drums go through, and we'd have to catch up, so we dumped the whole thing into the one barrel, And eventually that started to catch up, I guess, because they caught me one day doing that and beat the hell out of me. And then after that, ever after that, I was piling gasoline drums. I never could near the place after that until the Americans came and blew it up and burned it.
What kind of hours would you be doing?
Oh, geez, we start early in the morning to late night. We had no special hours. Just whenever that amount of work was done, the day one was done, that was... Well, then they blew that place up, and they didn't know what to do with it. So then we started digging.
Oh, do you remember when that would be? That would be towards the end of the war?
Yeah, I mean, that would be about 42, I guess. But towards the end of 42, they blew that up. They really blew it up.
Were there any prisoners killed in the bombing?
No. We were 3 miles away from it. But we were 3 miles away from it. We had to stay up all night and keep pouring water in our huts from the heat from that thing.
You'd be glad to see the place go.
Oh, yeah, we were glad to see that place go. Well, then, but they just took us another, and then we were digging tunnels in the side of the mountains to store their gasoline in. And see, after, towards near the end of the war, they had no gasoline, they had nothing. They were making alcohol out of brown sugar, putting it in 45-gallon drums, and that's what they were burning in their trucks and everything. This is alcohol. And we were digging these tunnels to store all this stuff in.
On Hong Kong Island?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, on the mainland, in Sham Shui Po.
Yeah.
Well, just out of Sham Shui Po. There was nine ranges of mountains there. Mm-hmm. Well, we were in the first range of mountains there, and that's where they had us working. But I think it was 42 that they started to take men out of our camp. They sent them to Japan. They sent them to work in the mines in Japan. They sent them to work in the shipyards in Japan. But it was only the healthy ones they took. Like now, I suffered from beriberi. Well, there's two kinds of beriberi. There's the dry and there's the wet. And I had the dry beriberi, and it affected my heart. You see, I'm pinching now for avitaminosis and beriberi. And it affected my heart, so I was most of the time in the hospital after that. I didn't do too much after that.
Can I ask about what it was like in the camp? I mean, especially the first little while, it was really...
Oh, it was terrible. It was terrible at first. We just kept day by day getting weaker. Our skin started to peel just like we had sunburns. And you'd bend down, you'd get dizzy. We were just gradually slipping down to skin and bone. And then after that, that's when the boys started, and then diphtheria hit. And it killed off, it started off maybe 2 days, 3 days, and the highest I can remember was 11 a day. They were dying from diphtheria. And dysentery, and of course malnutrition. But it was really hell. It's hard to explain, you know, just unless you were there to see what you were going to do.
Was there any morale in the camp? Were there any happy times at all?
Not at all. You couldn't have one. There was not to have happy times. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just a matter of going to work, coming home, just dragging yourself into bed, eating your bowl of rice, and going to sleep.
What kind of food were you getting?
Just the rice and the greens, like pak chawi, yam chawi. It's a sort of a cabbage. It's a, I don't know if you saw your pak chawi. It's a, it grows the same as a cabbage, but never comes to a head. Same kind of leaf, tastes like cabbage, but it never comes to a head.
Well, were you supplied by the Japanese?
Yes, we were supplied. Yeah. I think our ration was two dry ounces of rice a day.
It's very little food.
It's very little food. And that's what we were existing on. And then I think it was 1944, yes, it was just towards the end of the war, we got a Canadian Marine Corps special. It was the first thing that we ever did get to. It was any good.
Were you able to write letters at all, or did you ever receive letters?
No, I never did receive one. We were allowed to send a card, they give us a card, and we were to write on it. And then my wife got one, I think. I wrote about 10, but she got one. That was all she ever knew that I was alive. They didn't know who was alive, who was dead.
Mm. Were there any records kept by the Japanese or by any prisoners of war? And was it just Canadians that had Sham Shui Po?
Oh, there was Indians. There was Indians, British, and Canadians. But we were all separated in separate little compounds. The Canadians were in their compound, British were in their compound, and the Indians were in their compound.
You weren't allowed to visit each other?
No, it was all wired off separately.
Did anyone try and break out?
Oh, yes. In fact, I was on a breakout crew. It was a lucky thing, I guess, for me. I got dysentery and couldn't go. And they got caught. There was Payne Brzezinski. There was six of us all going to go. And they did go. Left me behind and they got caught. And they never heard from me again. Never. I don't think they even know where the graves are. But they never made it. Their boat upset on them or something. They weren't good enough sailors to cross. Apparently, there's a very swift current. But you got to know what you're doing to go through that current. And they misjudged it or something, and the boat upset, and they took them out of the water. They were heading for the jungle there of Colombia, from the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently it was well planned, but it didn't work out. And we had a few British sailors escape. They went over the fence. Never did hear from them anymore either. Whether they made it or not, I couldn't say. But I know that Brzezinski and Payne and them didn't make it, because who was in there? See, if you were a bad boy, they took you to Stanley Prison. And this guy was doing his time in Stanley Prison. When they were in there, they were brought in there during the night. But that was, nobody knows what happened to them after that. They just disappeared.
What were the barracks like? Did you sleep in beds?
On the floor.
On the floor?
Yeah, on whatever you could find to sleep.
Were they heated and cold?
No heat at all. And in the monsoon days, it was really cold, I'll tell you. They never had snow, which was a lucky thing, but when the monsoons came, it was really cold for the whole month of February. You never see the sun.
Mm.
And
how about clothing? Were you sure clothing?
No clothing. We had no clothing at all. All we had was just a G-string. That's the only clothing. We made our own shoes out of wooden blocks. No, we had no clothing.
Was there any punishment of any kind for people? You mentioned that you would beat up.
That's right. Well, punishment was punishment. You'd get that for doing nothing. I'll tell you one guy, this John Seawick, he's in Deer Lodge now. He's right off his rocker, and he got his shoes. And all they made us stand guard on ourselves. And it was his turn to stand guard at the door, and he wasn't at the door when they came there, and only man would beat him unmercifully. Because he wasn't at his place where he should have. And Captain Norris, they beat him unmercifully because he forgot to take and check a guy off. The list that was standing outside, and this guy had taken sick. And he forgot to take him off the working list and put him in the hospital. And there was one man missing. And they found him in the hospital, and oh my God, they were the heck out of noise. He never got over, he's dead now.
Were there any medical facilities? Was this your own hospital?
Well, it was just a hut. Yeah. This place did have beds in it. But there was no medical facilities. If they put you in there, and if you got better, you got better. And if you didn't, so there was no medical facilities at all. Yeah, we had Dr. Crawford. We had three doctors. We had the doctor of Royal Rifles, and we had our own doctor and a British doctor.
Was there ever a Japanese doctor? Because I would expect that many of the diseases that we were beginning would be very unfamiliar.
There was no. The only doctor we ever saw there, he was supposed to come and cure beriberi. He was supposed to be a specialist. He was a witch doctor. He put powder on your sores and lit a match to it and burnt it. There's many of our guys got burns on their back from this witch doctor. That was supposed to cure your beriberi. But that's the only Japanese doctor we ever saw. No, it was always our own Dr. Crawford. He was the only doctor we knew.
Then you were transferred from Changshifu. Did you go to Tokyo?
No, I never went. No, I stayed right in Changshifu. Never went over there. No, because see, I got very, very, and it affected my heart, and I just stayed right there. And I had the theory that it was tough enough that I didn't die with it, which a lot of them did, but I didn't. Pretty near, but I didn't.
Did you ever
that's why I didn't go. When all this was going, when they were taking all these men out to work different places, that's when I was in the hospital.
Somebody mentioned to me about the bugle that was carried by the women and grenadiers. I really don't know any details of it.
Well,
somebody mentioned a bugle and stuff.
Well, we had a bugle with us.
Value.
Well, the only sentimental thing I can see about it was they started to blow it, you know, when a man would die, they would blow. But then they were dying so damn fast that they cut it out. Because it was really spoiling the morale of the other guys, you know, right away then. They'd wonder when their turn was next. So they stopped that. They just used to pick them up and take them out, and nobody was any wiser. Oh yeah, they had this special compound that they had. As soon as you got it, you went into that compound. You went, and you either died in there or you walked out. And there was no serum or anything for you. You either made it or you didn't.
If we could maybe just go back a little bit, I'd like to know a little bit more about the battle. Do you remember anybody who was particularly heroic?
Well,
I suppose everybody, there must have been a lot of confusion.
There was a lot of confusion, yes. And, what was his name? He got to throw the cross.
Osborne.
Well, he was the only man that I know that was, what you call, heroic. Mm-hmm. But, some say he tripped on it, some say he fell on it. I don't know now yet.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I never saw any real. As I said, we were on the trucks all the time.
Yeah. I was told that toward the end, there was just so much confusion and panic that people were almost all on their own.
Well, we were. As I say, it was just a guerrilla warfare.
Yeah.
I mean, we couldn't get, there was no orders, there was no nothing. If we run into Japanese, the battle was on, and if there was too many, we'd take off, and that's all there was to it. But we had no ammunition, we had nothing. We had grenades and we didn't have the detonators to set them off.
No detonators?
No, you see, in the end of the grenades, there's a detonator was in there.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't even, we had the grenades, we had no detonators, so what the, you might as well have thrown rocks at them, that's all the good was done.
Would they have been shipped in Canada then?
Yeah, they weren't shipped in Canada. They come in separate boxes. You see, like an ordinary, they'd be detonated before they were sent up to the front lines, but. With us, there was no front line, and the detonators were one place and the grenades were another, and you had to find out where the detonators were if you found the grenades.
How about ammunition? Is there enough ammunition?
No, because we had a hard time scoring ammunition. We didn't even know where half this stuff was. And I don't think any of our oxygen was good.
I was told also that towards the end of the battle there was lack of water and food.
Well, you sure, because as I say, they cut our water off. Well, then once our water trucks were destroyed, we had nothing to haul around yet.
Oh, they destroyed the trucks?
Oh, sure, they shot the one I was in. They scared the daylights out of me. I mean, an airplane, I guess they figured we were hauling gasoline, and they filled it so full of holes it looked like a sieve when they got me. And the first bunch of bushes we came to, we were out of it. The heck with the rest, let the truck go. But after that, I mean, there was no water. You were lucky. We were drinking soft drinks. We were drinking whiskey. We were drinking anything we could get a hold of. No, there was no water. They just cut the water right off. And once we lost it, as I say, we only lost our truck. There was no deliveries, no nothing. And then they took command of the dairy farm, so that was it. I mean, there was no water.
And that was the end of the supply?
That was the end of the supply. Oh, they came on there. There were thousands, man, and man, and man. They just came. You couldn't stop them. But it's pretty hard to remember, you know, just how. And when I first came home, I had lots of ill feelings. But now, in fact, the graduate I go to now is Japanese, and they really have gone a little bit there. But when I first came home, there was ill feelings. But I don't know.
Do you remember much from? You spent most of the war in Shinshufo. Do you remember ever getting any information from the outside? Do you remember hearing what was happening during the war?
The information was coming in all the time. Oh yeah, we had our own radios in there. We had our own radios in there all the time. We were getting information all the time. In fact, the camp commandant said one time, if you wanted information, you had to come to our camp to get it. You know, and they were always searching for radios, but they never did find us because we had them hidden all over the place. We had a couple of Dutch submarine men. They were radio men, not the submarine, and they built the radio right in the chair. And the head of the Gestapo came in, and he sat on the chair while they tore our huts all apart, looking for the radio, and he was sitting on it.
Was he in a chair?
It was in a chair. And we used to charge our batteries with a rickshaw. We'd stand for hours turning the wheels of this rickshaw, and they thought we were taking exercise. We weren't taking exercise. We were charging batteries. We'd take turns turning these wheels, and we were charging our batteries. And that's where the radio was, right in the seat of the chair.
I know that they were still publishing newspapers in Hong Kong. Were you able to get those that came?
No, no. We got one the time they dropped the first atom bomb. That was, we got a tape of them, but the atrocities of Americans dropping it. Of course, that was towards the end of the war.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first newspaper we had been in. Otherwise, we never did nothing.
Did the attitude of the Japanese turn soften somewhat when they realized it was at the end of the war, especially after the bomb dropped?
Not so much. I mean, we could always tell when they lost the battle, because they'd come in hammering the hell out of us. For nothing. It wasn't until about the last week that they started stopping. And this Honda that we had, he was the camp commandant towards the end. And we thought he was a real nice guy. And that's the first guy the British were looking for. He was such a cruel... He was a Korean, he wasn't a Jap, he was a Korean. And he had been so cruel in other camps that they were looking, in every camp they came to, they were looking to see if he was dead. They got him in our camp. But we couldn't understand it, how they were looking at him to be so cruel.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a book at home now, I just picked it up out of the, it's a softback book. It's wrote by one of the professors that was on the war criminal trials. And it mentions his name all through the book.
Do you remember what happened to the other commandants?
No, our commandants were all taken away. I know I told you of our camp was hung. And as I say, Honda was hung too.
This didn't happen. This happened after the trial.
After the war was over. Mm-hmm.
When the camp was liberated, do you remember? When the first Americans came,
it was a Canadian ship came in first.
It was Canadian ship came in.
Yeah, yeah. And we went and stayed on it. We never went back to camp.
Where the Canadians came to camp?
Well, it was the Aussie soldiers that came in that went to the camp. No, the sailors. The Canadian ship, she picked her way through the minefields. She was the first one to come through the minefields. And then all the other boats followed her in. But it was a Canadian, we knew the war was over, a lone plane come over and dropped a hammer with a note on it and said the war was over. And then the next morning, a great big plane come over and dropped rations and parachutes into our camp. And then we heard the Canadian boat was in, and we all hightailed her down to the docks down there, and you got on the boat and you never left. In fact, they wanted to take us back to Canada, but they wouldn't allow us. And we had to, we came back to Canada, well, we came back as far as Hawaii by the Empress of Britain. And from Hawaii to San Francisco, we came in and won the Liberty Boats.
It must have been a very happy day,
but... Oh, yeah, that was a really good day then. Oh, yeah, really. Living the West End, we lived the really big stuff. And then on the boat coming home, well, not so much on the British boat, but on the American boat, they called us the milk babies because we got milk 10 o'clock in the morning, we had milk for dinner, we had milk 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we had milk for midday. And they named us the milk babies. We were known as the milk babies coming home. And in Hawaii, of course, we were there for a few weeks. We of course, American license there, and we got 6 cans of beer for the give us 6 cans of beer every day for a ration. And,
but there's still people sick at this time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there are a lot of people sick. We were also one fact they were going to stop me in Vancouver. That's as far as they were going to let me go. And I told them, I said, "Holy God, I've come all this way. How come you're going to stop me here?" Well, then they kind of decided, well, they come this far, they let me come. But when I came here, I was went right in the hospital. And apparently I had a very bad heart. I didn't know what I was going to do. Because we were drinking all the way home, and all this, no wonder my heart was bad. I didn't help it any. But I was in the hospital, like after I got my discharge, I was in for 6 months before I ever come out. Took me right in the hospital. And then I used to have to go every year, and then I went every 2 years, and now I haven't gone. I haven't been near the place now for about 5 or 6 years. I've never had any boys. I guess they figure I'm not going to get any better, so they're just normal. But that's what I'm pensioned for. Avitaminosis is very good. And I asked him what avitaminosis was. He said, "Don't worry, I covered them all with the same, so whatever it is, I don't know."
Can I ask how you felt about
Benjamin's
attitude when you got back?
You mean our government's attitude?
Yeah.
Never thought of it, never thought of it. And I have never.
Do you think you were treated fairly?
I do. I do. I think we were treated fairly. There are the odd ones that figure that the government owes them a living, but I don't think that way at all. I figure that we have been treated fairly. I have no right to the government at all, as far as the way my pension is right now. I figure I've been fairly treated.
When you came back from Hong Kong, did you come back with many others?
Yeah, we came back to the whole, what was of the camp, the whole camp.
The whole camp came back?
Yeah, the camp was about 200 or something. So I came back to the one together. And then, of course, it was the ones who came back from Japan, and they all 30 minutes later, at least. But as our camp, we all come home from it.
Do you remember what? I'm really anxious to, if you can remember anything that took place the day the camp was later, when the plane flew over and dropped the hammer with the note on it.
Oh, God, everybody was just jumping over. Everybody was as hilarious as you could make them, you know. You couldn't have given them a better present than that. You couldn't have given them that, especially when the planes come over and drop the crew. Oh, that was really a day. That was the day of all days. And they dropped about 11 barrels. There were 45-gallon barrels welded together, and they were just as full as they could fill them with everything. And they dropped them right in the center of our camp there. They had to put one right through the roof and land right on the stove.
Did you
have
food in it?
All food, all medicines, food and everything, it was all in those barrels. And then we lived happy after that. But as I say, I mean, I didn't eat too much of that because we got down on that Canadian destroyer and we stayed there. And in fact, he wanted to bring it back home, but they wouldn't allow it, so we had to come off the boat. And then I think it was about 3 days later, we were loaded on the Empress of Britain. Taken to Hawaii.
Was there any recreation in camp?
Oh, we never had strength enough to put that on. God, man, by the time we'd come home from work, we just flopped down and that was the end of us. We never had time to do anything.
You worked the airport first, and then you worked on.
And we worked on the oil refinery, and then we were digging tunnels towards the end. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we were getting weaker, thinner, and sicklier every day of the week. Well, I weighed about 96 pounds. And when I went into the camp, I was 172. And I shrunk an inch. I used to be 5'7.5". I went 5'7".
I guess there were a lot of men dying from malnutrition.
Just dying from malnutrition, and they would get
health diseases.
And they would get a beating for something, and they would just lay down in bed, just give up, lay down in bed. And we just simply give up. There's a lot of men that actually didn't have to die, they just give up. We had 3 or 4 men go completely off in a rocket. And we had one there, we used to call him Jock, and he was a World Life of Canada. And He just walked up to the guy and said he was going home. I mean, he didn't know what he was doing. They beat the hell out of him. He was going to walk out of the gate and go home. But, I mean, the poor guy didn't know what he was doing. He was absolutely out of his mind. And that's the way we brought him home. Whether he's ever come around again or not, maybe good food would bring him around, I don't know.
Were there any things that you used to think about a lot? Constantly bringing him out, maybe food, really?
No, I personally just put everything out of my mind and lived from day to day, because that was the only way we were ever going to make it, is to live from day to day. Not to think of anything of the past or anything that was going to come. Just, we go by today, we'll worry about tomorrow when it comes. And that's the only way that a lot of us survived. We did at first, you know, there was a few magazines around the map at first, and it did just bring some guys crazy looking at all this, and then we got it into our heads to get smart and just live day by day. And that was the only way that a lot of us ever made it. Because otherwise you would have gone local for sure.
You said that you don't hold any hostilities towards.
No, I don't. No. No, I haven't. I mean, it's just a friendship. I did at first when I first came back. I can tell you one instance. I don't know, right over here in the corner, it used to be R.S. Robinson's firm. Mm-hmm. And I worked for the National Cards and Stories when I first came back. And they sent me there with a load of hides. I backed in. And the guy said, well, get it unloaded. I look at see who said that. Here's the jack. Well, in my head just stood up. I chased him right through the office and straight down the street. If I got a hold of my head, I broke his neck. But that was the only incident that ever happened after that. I mean, I stayed clear of them for a while, and they stayed clear of me, and then it just wore out. After the year had gone by, I had nothing against them.
How were the Japanese soldiers reacting? In total, they weren't treated much better.
They weren't. They had no...
How were the Japanese soldiers reacted? In total, they weren't treated much better.
They weren't. They had no... They had no detentions in their army. They had a severe beating or shot. That's it. And when I mean a beating, they get a beating. I mean, it was a beating like you never saw. They really got... Oh, yeah. Well, they got the same as us. They treated us more or less, I guess, on the same. Outside, they had more heat than we did. I mean, they made sure they had heat. But if they ever got caught doing anything, it would just be bad. We had a little fellow there that couldn't even speak English. We used to call him Napoleon. He wore rubber boots and a great big long sword. And he couldn't speak a word of English, but he used to more or less kind of help us along, you know. But one day, he caught some of his sentries sleeping on the job. He took a baseball bat to them, and oh my God, he beat them something. I don't know, maybe he didn't break the ribs, I don't know. He just hammered the hell out of them with a baseball bat. And that was the punishment. And it was the same if they got a venereal disease. They couldn't go to the doctor. They either got some way of fixing it up or they died one or two. I mean, they didn't believe in this. They'd go to a doctor and get picked up. No, they weren't very good to their own men, I'll tell you that. But they weren't very good to us either. But they had no mercy at all. They worked until you can't stand up and then you shoot you or do something with it. They had no more use for it. And if they say, I mean, we understood they didn't take prisoners, but when they got so many of us, they didn't know what to do with them. And the Chinese, they never bothered taking prisoners, that's for sure. They shot them wherever they could. And they're cruel, but you couldn't believe some of the things they did to the Chinese. Oh my God, it's terrible. Like, every day they had holes. They had, in front of the guard room, they had three holes. And every day there was somebody in that hole. And they put a rope around their neck until their toes would touch the ground. Once their heels hit the ground, they hung themselves. And that's the best to see how long the guy was going to stay there until they hung himself.
This was still Chinese?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They had no mercy on Chinese. They just assumed stab him and look at him. But to us, they were a little better. I mean, they didn't quake.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they had the potential to be real cruel. Anybody could sit and watch a man hang himself and bet how long it was going to take to hang himself, Well, they had no mercy at all for Chinese. In fact, he had a Chinese lips, and he was wounded. And that's the only thing he saved him, the tiger on his neck. They just shot him right in the dead. And that was in Baltimore Hospital. That's where they raped the nurses in there, too. They raped all the nurses, shot something up.
These are Chinese nurses?
No, they were British nurses. Our nurses, for some reason or other, they repatriated our nurses back home. But the British nurses, they put in the prison camp.
So they weren't treated very well at all?
Oh, God, no, no. They were
raped?
Raped and every other thing. But our nurses, for some reason or other, they sent them back home. Well, one of them knew this, Miss McLeod. The father was a great lawyer. But took McLeod on him in Curtis. And that was his daughter. They sent her back. But, I don't know why, but they did. They sent four Canadian, there were four Canadian nurses. I don't know if they were in that raven deal when the war ended or not. I never did find out. I never got talking to them. He raped them or shot them. I know we asked one British nurse if she was raped. She said, "Well, you don't see no holes in my body, do you?"
A good shot. when you went to Hong Kong, I guess you were trained almost as a garrison person.
Yeah.
Did you expect war with the Japanese?
No. No, we didn't know what we were going to do. But that was the sad part about it. I mean, they trained us as a fully trained machine gun regiment and cut us down to infantry and made garrison out of it. You know, that was what made us more or less men. See, and then we were, a machine gun regiment's only 800, and they brought us up to 1,000, you see. And they brought in this part of this South Saskatchewan regiment to make up our quota of men and on the regiment. But we had, as infantry, we had no training at all. No training at all. They handed the rifle and said, "Here you go." But you learn awful fast, you know, when it starts. It takes long to learn.
No, I think that's
okay.
Do you have anything else to add?
No, I don't think so.
I have a question. Do you happen to know if any men kept diaries or any records of any period?
No, I don't know anybody kept any diaries. I often wish I had kept a diary, you know, but I never had the time or the patience to do it towards the end. I guess we would have let it start, but towards the end, because we never had the strength or the will to do it.
There's something else. I happen to be reading a Hong Kong newspaper dated 1942, Hong Kong Times. English version. There was a mention in that paper about the Japanese making a film about the occupation of Hong Kong.
My God, they did too. That was when they run they used all Indians. And they run them up the hills and chased them and fired at them as they were going. You know, but there was Indian troops they used for that.
So there was a film made?
There was a film made, yeah. It was made and they used Indian troops. And they chased them up the hills, and they were firing at them as they were going and running, you know, up the hill.
Were they actually firing at them?
Oh yeah, they were actually firing at them, but firing over them, I guess,
yeah.
More or less.
Yeah.
And they had the plane bombing and everything else, and they had these Indian troops running up the hill. Yeah, there was an actual film made, and it was made in front of Shamsipo Camp. I guess whether they wanted us to see this filming or what, I don't know. But it was made right in at the front of our camp was with the mountains, and that's where they were running them up. They just took them out of our camp and chased them up the hill, and they were filming. And as it was made, oh yeah, there was an actual film made.
Well, that's interesting. Because I think we're
going
to try and see if we can get a hold of it. If it still exists.
If it still exists, I imagine it must exist somewhere. Because there was one made.
We're trying to gather as much information as
possible. Yeah, there was a film made. For sure, there was a film made. Because we watched it make it. Well, we watched it make part of it. How much more they added to it after what we saw, I don't know. But I imagine it would be mostly more than what we saw. But,
I would imagine it's quite slanted.
Yeah, oh, it's all slanted. Oh, sure. They just took them out of our camp and run them up the hill. And it couldn't help but be slanted. I don't think I can think of anything else right now. Maybe when I go home and think the whole thing over, I'll think, you know, but I don't right now.
Well, I'll give you my name and address and phone number.
Yeah.
You can have it, you can
take it
anything else.
Yeah, if I can find out if somebody's like that, the fellow by the name of Jim Fury's got a lot of pictures of us guys. They've taken right after the war. He's got quite a few pictures of the war in the camp.
Jim
Fury.
Sure.
I believe he looks for the man called the telephone. He used to have a service station for him. But he has a lot of pictures.
Oh, Jim
Fury.
He used to have a service station on
the
Road
up in Mexico. Yeah, he had a lot of other than the pictures that were taken right after the war.
Was the camp bombed towards the end of the war? Was Hong Kong bombed?
Oh, yeah, terrible. Oh, yeah, really bombed in Hong Kong. They just cleaned that whole place right out. There wasn't hardly any Hong Kong standing. They never hit the camp. Never once. Fragments hit the camp, but never the bomb. Oh yeah, they bombed the whole of Hong Kong. There was nothing left of Hong Kong and everything. And the Navy ships, they bombed the, you know, the Navy ships would come in there to get out of the road. I guess they're being chased by subs or something, and they'd come into the harbor of Hong Kong, and as soon as they came in there, in come the Navy planes after them. Let go with rockets and whatever they want. And I don't know what they were after downtown, but they used to carpet bomb that place regularly.
Carpet bomb?
Yeah, that's one plane let his go, and right behind it another one. You don't know when it's going to end. You know, it ends just as suddenly as it starts. But you often wonder where the heck it is going to end. Mm-hmm. And towards the end, they were using the sentry bombs. They burnt the place, they bombed the place. I don't know what they were after, but they were after something down in the center of the town. And they did find out what they were at.
Well, do you know what happened to the Japanese soldiers? They rounded up.
They were all rounded up and put in camps. And they were still in camps when they left. What happened to them after that, I don't know. Well, yeah, they rounded them all up and put them in prison.
Oh, and what company
do you remember? Hickory.